Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight on Feed Your Head, we have Rick Staggenborg, and he says I gave him the wrong phone number, so I was thinking he wasn't calling in. He's here, and Acrimony Care, too, she's been listening with me for a while and has something as we go if she cares to. So good that you got the right number. I didn't remember giving you one. I thought it was just the show number, Rick, so glad you found it.
Not a problem.
You are the founder and president of Take Back America for the People. You want to tell us just a little bit about that?
Well, the reason that I started it was because I had a feeling at the time that there was going to be difficulty unifying the movement for a constitutional amendment to abolish corporate personhood and take away the so-called right of corporations to buy elections and restrict rich people from buying elections. Turns out I was right. We haven't really done a lot to unify, and I've had a lot of difficulty getting moved to amend to consider the implications of writing an amendment at the top and then claiming that hundreds of groups support it when they never had any input before it was written. And that's put them at odds with other groups like people. Public Citizen and Free Speech for People. They have a different strategy. They haven't got behind a specific amendment. They're basically supporting amendments as they're proposed in Congress, which a number of the leaders in Move to Amend considers inside the Beltway mentality. My position is we should be supporting all these efforts, including the Article 5 effort for a constitutional convention. All of these things will converge, I think. President Obama's giving the message. He just came out and said he wants a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. Of course, Move to Amend and Take Back America for the People, abolish corporate personhood. Now, we all want something much stronger, but that's a start. To have a president talk about something like that is crucial. And I hope that it's not too late to get people to unite around a strategy that's as broad as possible.
The broader it is, well, I understand the broader it is. I mean, the more people potentially that you can get involved in it, but then it has to be narrowed down somehow, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but that's the consensus process. And I thought Occupy was going to provide that example, how to do that. But the problem is, now I'm not disparaging
consensus
any individuals.
Doesn't work.
But the problem is, it could work. But the problem, the biggest
problem. Oh, I'm sorry,
problem,
I didn't know I was on mic.
I'll put you right on.
Okay. The biggest problem that I've seen is that the leaders of these groups, well, not all of them, but some of the leaders of these groups want to sort of lead the parade, and they want everybody to fall in line behind them. And part of this is competition for money and media attention. And so that's a real problem, and it's always been a problem on the left. It's not a problem on the right, where they march in lockstep on the corporate agenda.
Well, Occupy to me seems like a lot of people finally finding a voice, and it's okay that it's not the same voice. What they're doing, I think what they've woke a lot of people up to is that there's a lot of us that are very dissatisfied. And so now maybe that's the next level that Occupy needs to unite on a few crucial issues instead of splintering off.
Well, you know, that's exactly the strategy that was proposed by Adbusters when they suggested having the Occupy movement. And they said that the two key issues are banksters taking on the banking industry and the need for a constitutional amendment to clean up elections. And I think that was exactly right. But Occupy is resisting focusing on any particular issues, and that's a huge strategic mistake in my opinion. Occupies around the country have passed resolutions calling for a constitutional amendment. Now, this is the central issue that everything else flows out of. If it wasn't for the fact that corporations run the country, then we would be addressing these issues in Congress. And that's the central problem, and that really is the mission of Take Back America for the People. It's incorporated as a 501c3, and our mission statement says that we are educating the American public, and the world public for that matter, about the costs of allowing the U.S. government to be controlled by corporations.
So it is the 501c3.
Yes, it is, but yes. I'll say right now that we haven't got a lot of help. I still haven't even put up the website, but the most important project that we're working on is the Pledge to Amend campaign, and the details of that can be found on my personal website, soldiersforpeaceinternational.org.
So how if somebody just wants to get involved right now, what, they go to Soldiers for Peace International?
Right. And this is Soldiers for Peace International is, I call it an anarchical network. And what it is it basically has the same structure as Occupy. There are no leaders. I founded it, and I encourage other people to get involved in any way they can. And I do suggest that they focus again, on corporate control of the U.S. government. I think that's the key to ending war, addressing global warming, preventing mass famine from global warming, taking on Monsanto before with their monoculture, sterile seeds, and their use of one single pesticide. They create a super virus that's going to wipe out crops. We need universal health care, not just in the United States, but around the world to prevent pandemics. All these are issues that are not being addressed, and they won't be until the U.S. government is back in the hands of we the people.
Just a prediction, and I mean this is just your own opinion. What do you think is going to happen with the election? Who do you think is going to win, and how will that affect what you're doing?
Well, I think that there's a clear distinction between Mitt Romney and Obama. First of all, Mitt Romney says that corporations are people, so you know he wouldn't come out with he wouldn't come out in support of an amendment to overturn Citizens United. Furthermore, Romney wants to attack Iran while Obama is using a lot of political capital to avoid doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Putting at odds with Israel, and Netanyahu's trying to pull his chain by putting pressure on Congress, who are beholden to AIPAC, to pressure the president into going to war. And that's not in the interest of the American people. It's not in the interest of Israel. Israelis and Americans both oppose a war with Iran, and yet both governments are pushing for it. But I think Obama is actually doing the best he can to resist it. So, yeah, he's prolonging the war in Afghanistan. He authorized the CIA, no doubt, to get involved with Libya, because we know they're involved with Libya. They're involved with Syria, and they're setting up Iran. But I don't think he's going along with the entire agenda. I think he sees what's happening, and he's doing what he can to try to wake up the American people. I mean, he said during his first campaign that he can't be the change. We have to be the change. That means we have to organize, and we're not doing it. I mean, we're starting, don't get me wrong, but we got a long ways to go.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a long ways to go. So your prediction would be that Obama wins?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, every time Romney opens his mouth, he sticks his foot in it, and he thinks he did a great thing by selecting Ryan, but the truth is getting out that Ryan is a stone-cold liar. He's an ideologue who's pushing free market capitalism, which is turned into crony capitalism. There is no free market, and you and I both know that.
Right.
Governments have always supported specific industries, and when corporations are allowed to buy elections, obviously those are the ones they're going to support, and those are the war profiteers, among others.
So, okay, then you do think that Obama will get it, and things will, what, get better? I mean, now, since he made this one small step, do you think that he'll be able to continue that?
Only if we demand it. Honestly, I think Obama pretty much literally has a gun to his head. We know what happened to Kennedy when he tried to pull out of Vietnam and take on the Fed and take on the Mafia all at the same time.
There were a lot of people that were after Kennedy, and we'll never know what really happened.
Well, I would say if you read Legacy of Secrets, it's pretty clear that the Mafia was at the center of it, but it's actually pretty complicated. Kennedy was trying to stage an invasion of Cuba on the fly, didn't want anybody to know this. The plan was to do it in early December. All this is public knowledge now, and the Mafia had its own agenda. There was one particular Mafia don in Louisiana who was about to be indicted and deported, and the evidence is clear. He confessed, actually, that he ordered the hit with the assistance of Traficante in Florida and I forget the name of the other guy in Chicago. It was a mob hit. And the reason
I read a lot that it was Johnson that was behind it. I mean, it seems like there was a lot of people who had reason.
I thought, frankly, it was the CIA acting on behalf of a small cabal of corporations with cooperation from the military. Now, we know that Secret Service was involved, so that tells me it wasn't just a mob hit. Secret Service stood down just before he was shot. This is on video. It's on my website. But the ones who actually ordered the hit and covered it up by murdering Oswald were the Mafia. But the CIA was clearly messing with Oswald, too. He was I haven't read the whole book, but in my understanding, he was actually getting paid by them. He was certainly being monitored by the CIA because of his trip to Russia not long before all this and his attempts to get asylum in Cuba. It was complicated, but the biggest piece of it, according to this book, which is incredibly well documented, Legacy of Secrets, the upshot is that the FBI didn't want to reveal their failures. They weren't communicating with the CIA, and the CIA didn't want to reveal their part in the plot because Kennedy didn't want to. And Robert Kennedy knew what happened, or he didn't know who did it. But he withheld crucial evidence about the plot, which would have implicated the Mafia.
Right.
Well, actually, it's more complicated than that. It was two separate plots. The Mafia had their own. They were working with elements of the CIA. But then there was this officially sanctioned plan to stage a coup by Kennedy. So very, very complicated. I do recommend that book. A lot of it's laid out in just the first couple chapters.
Yeah, it was just one of those convoluted things, and then people say, well, I wonder how things would have changed if he would have lived. We're discussing. But back to this issue that you are adamant about, you said that you just decided on your own that it needed to be done, right?
Right, and I didn't know. That was just my guess about what was going to happen. I mean, you know, I've studied the movement on the left for a long time and realized that the people are not working well together. And I am a psychiatrist, and I worked for the VA, and I've worked with people of all different political persuasions. And as you know, I ran for the Senate also. So that gave me more experience talking to mixed audiences of liberals and conservatives. And I think that the key really to getting this amendment passed is making both conservatives and liberals understand this is the one issue that's going to allow us to take back control of the government. Until we do that, we're not going to further either the conservative or the liberal agenda, except where it corresponds with the corporate agenda.
Right. Well, yeah, because the I host in another show, Brian's always talking about the corporate elite, but it's true that's like the foundation for so many things. So you can fix this or you can fix that, but if you don't fix the main thing, it's not really fixed. You're maybe band-aiding it or something.
Exactly. And so one of the things that I try, well, for one thing, being a 501c3, we're totally nonpartisan. But I think that's not only important for uniting the left and right, but it's important to make people who back the Republican and the Democratic parties understand that neither party is working for them. As long as they accept these corporate donations and these massive donations from the rich, that's who they'll serve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just basic. Can you tell me, because you are a psychiatrist, so why, in your opinion, do people who are really the downtrodden, I mean, the people who have no insurance, who may have been laid off or hours cut, whatever, why are they, so many of them, still like Romney supporters?
Well, there's a couple of major factors and probably a half a dozen minor ones. Number one, if you grow up in a family that's Republican or Democrat, you're overwhelmingly likely to stick with that party for the rest of your life. Number two is that the Republican Party has mastered the art of the big lie and appealing to people's emotions, primarily fear. And so what they've done is they always deliver their message in a way that inspires fear or false hope occasionally, like Romney's speech at the conventions and Ryan's too. It's a bunch of lies cobbled together to give people hope that they're the answer. But anybody who understands what they're saying and what would really happen knows, first of all, it's based on lies, and second of all, it makes absolutely no sense. But if you're a evangelical Republican, you're going to believe it, just like evangelical Democrats vote for corporate tools, like my opponent, Ron Wyden, here in Oregon. They just automatically vote for him because he has a D after their name. We have to get away from that kind of thinking, and we have to target the corporate tools by forcing them to choose between supporting the amendment or supporting the corporations that put them in office.
And, well, given that choice, I mean, I would say that they're going to choose the corporations because the corporations pay them.
Well, they pay for their commercials. But here's the thing. This is the piece that most people miss. If we make this a campaign issue and if it has support from both Democrats and Republicans, in other words, we're not saying vote for this Democrat because he supports it, but don't vote for the Republican or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying vote for somebody from any party who supports the amendment if they're running against somebody who won't.
Okay, yeah. So then what is the best way to, you know, let John Doe know what's going on? Because really, John Doe is on the couch watching TV, doesn't care, listening to Fox. How do we get past that?
Well, there's local Move to Amend groups forming all over the country. They are mostly, their biggest push is to get city councils to pass resolutions. But you can do the same thing in Democratic and Republican central committees. You can do it at the county level. You can do it by referendum, and they're doing a couple of those, or at least one here in Oregon. They're doing it in other places. They did it in Boulder, Colorado. Referendum is one of the best ways to wake up the public because they see it on the ballot and they know they have to give it some thought. And so that's the best way to get bang for your buck with what little advertising we can get. But mostly it's doing it on the ground, gathering petition signatures, whether it's for a referendum or just a Move to Amend petition or some similar petition like the one we have, so that you make people aware of this. And the easiest way to sell the message is to tie it to Citizens United, just like Obama did. Even though we want a stronger amendment, that jogs people's memories. 80% of both self-identified liberals and conservatives were opposed to Citizens United. So you say, we want a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, and they go, yeah! And then you lay out the details of what that means. It's not only abolishing corporate personhood, that actually has nothing to do with campaign finance reform. What the key is banning corporate contributions and giving Congress back the power to limit individual donations. But if you don't do it through by making that a campaign litmus test, if you don't do it that way, then you're going to get people who are sitting in office going, oh, I get it, I have to pass something. And what they'll do is they'll pass a toothless amendment. So we have to educate the people at the same time that that's not good enough. I mean, it's great that Obama proposed that. Let's get the conversation going, and then let's explain to the people who are sitting on the couch when they are finally waking up and realizing they have to cast a vote. Let's make them aware that that's the issue they should focus on.
Well, how do you
get them to begin waking up?
Great question. The easiest way is probably for the average person is to show up at one of these town hall meetings where they're asking for your vote and ask them in public, will you support an amendment like this, and explain to them the amendment that you're talking about. That way the people in the audience hear it and they hear the response. So that's the most important. I think the second most important is write letters to the editor. I see a lot of them in our newspaper in Eugene, Oregon, which is near here. More and more people are writing letters to the editor. And they're doing the same thing in other cities where they have moved to amend chapters around Oregon and I'm sure around the country. So the more people that do that, the more you create this general awareness of the issue, and it makes it a lot harder for the people who are on the couch to ignore it. I mean, if they work, they may hear about it in discussions at work. If they listen to anything but Fox, they're going to hear about it. And for that matter, Fox sometimes lets slip some progressive ideas. I was listening to Fox one time, and they reported on a CBO study that showed that if we include undocumented aliens in a single-payer healthcare system, it would save money. I mean, I could not believe I heard that on Fox. But, you know, this stuff slips through.
Really? That doesn't even sound like Fox. But here's another thing.
Just yesterday, I came across an article by John Stossel, who's a blogger for Fox, and he's on Fox Business News. And he said, we should legalize all drugs. I mean, they're not all crazy.
No, they're not all crazy. But it's, that makes you wonder, you know, okay, is he their token? I know that this month, well, not this month, September, also he's going to be interviewing several of the third-party candidates. And we're very excited about that. We know that Fox has a way of twisting things, but, you know, it's an opportunity.
I agree, and I don't think he's a token. I think he's actually more independent-minded. Now, it may cost him his job eventually. That's not the first time that he stood up and said something that was contrary to the corporate agenda. So I honestly think he is honest. Now, he's on Fox Business News, and he does push their view of economics and business. So it's not like he's some flaming liberal, somebody like Alan Combs, had Alan Combs actually acted like Alan Combs instead of a corporate tool when he was on Fox. You know, this is an incremental thing. We've got to build up and take advantage of whatever opportunities we have. If John Stossel says something that makes sense, we need to promote that and get
exactly.
people to realize we can reach out to the right. We have a lot of issues in common, especially the libertarians. I mean, they want to legalize drugs, at least marijuana. They want women's right to access to abortion and birth control. They want a lot of things that we want. They want transparency in government.
Mm-hmm.
We may disagree on the end game, what the kind of government we want, the kind of society we want, but we can work together where we have common interests. You know, there's a war going on between the rich and the middle class, and in a war, you take your allies where you can get them. And even if, I mean, look at World War II. We teamed up with the commies, and then we wanted to invade them as soon as we took out the Nazi Germany. But in the meanwhile, you know, we couldn't have won the war without them, or at least not without hundreds of thousands of more deaths.
Right. And that's it. War is one of those things that make strange bed pals, and this is the war. So, yeah, I mean, I think we find we have much more in common with a lot of people than not. And like you said, we may not envision the same in society, but, you know, by the time we get to that, we may be more on the same page, too, if we work through these other things together.
That's right. And, you know, both sides talk about we the people. Both sides talk about having a real Republican democracy, or whatever your favorite term is. That you can call it democracy or republic, but it's really something in between. But the only way that we're going to have a government of, by, and for the people is to come to a consensus. And you can't do that if you regard your fellow American as the enemy. We have much more in common, really, than our differences. I mean, 70% of Americans want to get out of Afghanistan. They said that 2 years ago. Why are we still there? Why do we have a long-range plan? Because we don't control the government. So if we focus on issues like that, I think we can find that consensus. And then, of course, the key issue being corporate control of government.
Right, right. Now, I have heard that, I've heard it said that if 10% of the population actually bands together, they can really change things. Have you heard that figure, or what do you think about it?
Yes, I have, and I think the reason that that's true is if enough people start having the same ideas at the same time and realize that they're all talking about the same thing, that creates a change in the collective consciousness, in this case the collective political consciousness. And that's actually what we need to do. I wrote a book of essays. It's linked to my website, and one of my favorites is called The Tectonic Paradigm Shift. And the idea is that once we hit that critical percentage of people, particularly influential people who really get ideas out, that we can have a rapid growth in awareness of that these issues. But like, let me give you a couple examples. Number one, I started out saying that we have all these threats. These are threats to human civilization, and they are imminent.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to create that tectonic paradigm shift, or human civilization will collapse. The signs are all around us. So, and the key, in my mind, to saving human civilization is creating democracy in America and allowing it to spread around the world. So I have a radio show of my own, as you know, on Saturday
mm-hmm.
mornings,
right.
8 a.m. Pacific and 10 a.m. Central. And we are going to address that very issue. What will it take to change the collective consciousness of Americans and people around the world so that they understand that it's possible to end war? It's a choice, but we have to control our own governments in order to do that. And the key is here in the United States, because we have the biggest military in the world, and basically it's us and England and all the people who know they better not mess with us. People in government who were put there by the economic elite. They took out Strauss-Kahn in France because he was a socialist and he wanted to change the way the IMF funding was so that it wouldn't be pegged to the dollar. The dollar would collapse if it wasn't being propped up by international bankers who were creating all this credit. It's just ones and zeros on a computer screen out in cyberspace somewhere. It's not real. And it's the only thing propping up the dollar. And the dollar would collapse if Gaddafi had succeeded in switching to a gold-based dinar.
Right.
And that's why they took him out.
Yes, yes. And it was, I mean, that was one of those things for those of us who follow, and I don't pretend to know all that much. It's just that I know a lot more than the people around me personally, but about the world things. But as soon as they started talking humanitarian aid to Libya, I knew it was over, because, you know, they don't care about humanitarian aid because we support many dictators and always
mm-hmm.
have. So it was definitely other reasons. But a lot of people bought into that.
Well, that's because they don't pay attention, and the media doesn't cover international issues. When they do, they're promoting the corporate
mainstream media. You know, we call it mainstream media. Some people call it lamestream media. You're not going to get the truth from that. And if you watch it, whatever. I mean, I don't have TVs. I dump them because it was just, you know, too tempting to actually watch them. And I have better things to do than watch reality shows. But, you know, and I can't get my...
Not to mention unreality shows that we call them.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That kind of thing. But I get my news from other countries. I get my news about this country from other countries, which is just too convoluted. mean, I'll read papers online and things like that too from here, but to get a real feel, you need to compare it to what the other country's news is.
Right, right. And you get, for instance, in RT News out of Russia, you actually get a pretty unbiased opinions, although they're not too critical of the Russian government.
Right.
Which is natural, because they don't want to get shut down.
Sure,
but take
yeah,
that into account, and you see what they're saying about what's really going on, and you get a lot more useful information than you'll ever get from any of the mainstream media here.
Yeah, I mean, I go to RT all the time. I just laugh myself frequently over it, because who'd have thought when I was growing up and, you know, Russia's enemy and on and on and on, that I would go to Russia Today for news? It's too bizarre. But before I forget, I want to say, now your radio show is in the morning, and where can
uh-huh.
we find this?
If you Google SFTI Radio, which stands for Soldiers for Peace International, it'll pop right up our show page, and you can click on the upcoming show, and if you're listening to it at the time it's on the air, you'll click to the live show, and you can join
awesome.
Us in the chat room. You can call in from anywhere in the world. It's a pretty cool thing. So it's an international talk show, and we're really
right.
trying to get more international guests and callers. We've had a
yeah.
number of international guests. Sometimes we have problems with making the system work on international calls. But we just recently did a show on this whole New World Order, which is based largely on the Project for a New American Century. If you're familiar with the Project for a New American Century, it came out exactly a year before 9/11, and it said that the plan is to take out Libya, Syria, Iran, Lebanon, and we've seen three of those countries, and Afghanistan and Iraq. We've already seen five of those countries being attacked.
Yeah.
We haven't bombed Iran yet, but we're sure certain people
making
are sure
noise
trying to make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they said out loud what they want to do, and they're doing it, and people don't get it. But the dots are easy to connect if you know where to direct your attention. And I would say SFTI Radio is one of those sources of information. I really encourage people to listen and tell other people about it.
Right.
Look at our podcast library, and you'll see that we're talking about all this stuff every week.
Right. Everything's archived. And I know what you're saying about international calls. Usually, though, Skype has been really good to me in the past, almost 2 years on the radio. It's been good. But some people in other countries have decided, I mean, they call on their phone. Their phone is good, and it doesn't cost them much to make calls like it would us to call them, which I find strange.
Short call, well, you know, the prices are partly based on the going rate. For instance, I had a gentleman who was supposed to join me from Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it would cost about $10 to make a call for an hour or to do a show for, I forget exactly, but that was the cost. And, of course, obviously it would cost a heck of a lot more than that if you're calling from the United States.
Oh, yeah.
And interestingly, if you call Israel from the United States, it's one of the highest cost calls you can make. It's 90 cents a minute on the AT&T worldwide plan.
Well, I have a friend in Israel who I've interviewed before, a couple times, I guess, and he calls on his phone. He said, I'll call you. He said, it doesn't cost, because I've talked to him other times, that it cost me almost nothing to call you.
Wow. I'm going to have to call a friend of mine in Israel and see if she can be
and,
on
and find out if that's the same. Now, I'm not sure. I think this was a landline. It could have been a cell. But he had said, don't worry about the cost, because he didn't have Skype, and he said he wasn't techie. I mean, he was, you know, low techie person like me. And he said, I'm just going to call you on phone. And so he has. And he said it's very inexpensive. And in fact, he said it's less for him to call me than to call some other cell phone company in Israel because of something or other. It's crazy.
Well, there are a number of plans. People can get bothium, and you can call a lot of countries for a couple cents a minute.
Yeah.
I've never got into that. As far as I know, you have to do it from the computer. But that's there's Magic Jack, which is another way.
Right, I've heard of that, yeah.
So those are a couple ways that people in other countries communicate with me, and I'm sure a lot of other people in the States and around the world.
Yeah, I mean, Skype is good for me. I don't know. I just haven't had much trouble at all with that, from Australia to Gaza, India, Pakistan. Not a problem. Venezuela.
Gaza is a special case because I also had a guest scheduled from Gaza. Well, the Israelis have tightened down on imports of gas. And, of course, power is intermittent in Gaza, too.
Yeah.
So if they don't have power and they can't buy gas for a generator, they're out of luck.
Yeah.
And that's what happened when I tried to schedule this.
Right.
So,
sometimes I have recorded them because during the time when they had electricity. Because, they know it's going to be going, and sometimes they actually know when. So, I mean, what a horrible way to live. What a horrible way to be forced to live.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's what we're fighting for. You know, this isn't just about justice in the United States, because as Martin Luther King Jr. said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Exactly.
And if people realize how interdependent we all are in our freedoms and our access to basic human needs, then they'll stop thinking in terms of Americans versus people in other countries, Christians versus Muslims, Republicans versus Democrats. We're all people, you know,
exactly.
We're all in this together. And right now, human civilization is threatened with destruction, self-destruction.
We have so much more in common with these people. And I just, every day, I'm so thankful for the Internet, which has done so much to help us meet people on the other side of the world and talk with them and find out. You know, I mean, we knew intellectually that, of course, we're all the same. We all have families, this and this. But when you get involved in their lives and you find out more and more, it's just like your neighbors, because they are our neighbors. They're just a little distant. But, I mean, they've got the kids. They worry about school. They worry about jobs. They don't like their governments. You know, there's a lot in common.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I do suggest people go to our website. You can join us on Facebook. We have fascinating conversations on Facebook. But really, I think the show is more important because we can have live conversations.
Right. So you could call in. And so that is, you said just to Google SFPI Radio, and it will show up. And then you probably, on the website also, you would, you know, mention the shows. I know that the Facebook page, Soldiers for Peace International, you'll talk about the radio show. So there's a lot of ways to connect up with it. Because that's it. We all have to be supporting each other on any kind of radio show, any kind of public forum, because, you know, you're going to reach people I don't, I'll reach people you don't, and this is the way we get the word out.
Absolutely.
So that's. I know you've talked before about the fascist government. I wanted to ask you, how fascist do you think our government is?
Well, you have to look. There's actually a big academic debate about what fascism is. And a lot of scholars say that to have a fascist government, you have to have a totalitarian dictator. You have to have a police state. You have to have control of the media. And you have to have corporations basically controlling the government in their mutual interest.
And the media. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We have all those things except a dictator. And it's my position that when Mussolini said that fascism is best defined as corporatism, but that's really the essential defining feature. Everything else follows from it. Because you don't need a dictator when a people voluntarily gives control to the corporations like they did in this country during Reagan and ever since.
Yeah. So then, yeah, we're pretty much there then by that, yeah.
I think it's a purely academic argument if you want to say this isn't the fascist government. I think for all intents and purposes, it's already here, and it's just getting worse. With the National Defense Authorization Act, the president can declare any American citizen an enemy combatant, throw them in a military prison without charges as long as he wants, or if they're in another country, he can just assassinate them and get away with it.
Right, them and whoever's around them.
Yeah, right.
Sure. Yeah. Because, you know, for all these drones are supposed to be so right on. And, of course, you know, the United States would not kill civilians. Well, how many women and children and men have we killed that have nothing to do with anything except they're living their life? I say the drones aren't working that well at targeting. But
well, I think they're working exactly as they're intended to. I'm sure Obama regrets some of the decisions that the CIA has made to pull the trigger, and the CIA has actually been taking the task for that. That's one of the reasons that Obama personally orders most strikes now. Still not all of them. The CIA and Defense Department can order some of those strikes. But here's something that most people probably don't know.
Yeah.
After they hit a target, they'll wait a certain amount of time and then send another drone strike. Why would they do that if it wasn't to kill the people that came to rescue them? To see who they could save.
Well, the second one usually is they're targeting the people who are doing the funeral.
Well, or right, I'm talking about right afterward, minutes afterward. They give time for people to come in and try to save the survivors.
Oh, right, right.
And then they bomb them, too. It's like in Oakland, where they attacked those people that tried to help Scott Olson when he was shot in the head with a tear gas canister. This is happening. Our government supports it, and some of our police departments use the same tactics. That's a police state.
Yeah. That's, well, and we saw that with that film that WikiLeaks released when the journalists were shot, and that man with his child going to school, he stopped in his van, and they killed him.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. They shoot the helpers. Sacred, and in that case, I mean, they had shot journalists, and there was no reason. They just saw some people, so they shot them. I don't know.
I think that's probably the main reason that they want to try Bradley Manning for treason, and they want to bring Assange to this country to do God knows what.
Oh, I hope that somehow Ecuador works something out to get him down there, because there's no. If he gets to this country, he's dead or life in prison, the torture or something. So,
I cannot believe the arrogance of these people that think they can get away with this. What they have done is they've woken up people in Britain. If they're going to go to those lengths to get a whistleblower, break international laws right and left.
Yes.
Then if that doesn't wake up the people of Britain, nothing will. I mean, my God, look at the movie V for Vendetta. That told what was going to happen in England, and it was already happening here in the States. If the people of America and the United Kingdom work together across international borders to fight fascism, we can get the people to understand this stuff. And if you saw that movie, at the very end, they had 1 million people in the streets of London standing up to tanks, and the tanks backed off. And we know that may be what it takes.
It may be. Yes, I didn't see the movie. I just made a note. It might. Now, I have a friend who says that revolt isn't necessarily the answer, that rebellion is.
Go ahead. I'm not sure I understand the distinction.
Well, usually you think about revolution, you think about violence. I mean, I do, and I know that that's wrong, because revolution can be like the media revolution or something. But she by rebellion, she's just meaning the civil disobedience, kind of just go ahead and do things what you consider the right way kind of thing, whether it's in your small community or something else, depending on the issue. But she thinks if enough people just do that and aren't intimidated by some stupid little petty law, that we'll get a bigger base.
I agree. Of course, the downside of that is that people, the Black Bloc movement in Occupy, for instance, they don't know where to draw the line. They think property destruction is fine when all it does is drive people away. People say, oh, you don't represent me. How are you going to represent the 99% if you're running around destroying private property?
Right. That's it. So, I mean, like, destroying property and you know, hospitals or anything like that, I mean, that's ridiculous. But, yeah, that's not the way to do it. And that's, every time we've had some kind of flare-up in this country, you know, they torch the shop owners and all this. And they're not the ones who brought this problem on. So
I agree. You know, there's a classic book called Against Fascism and War by George Dimitrov. That's another book that I highly recommend that people read.
It, would you repeat that again, please, Rick?
It's called Against Fascism and War by George Dimitrov. You can buy it cheaply on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's what it is. It was his speech before the 7th International Communist Congress in 1936 when the world was being awakened to the dangers of fascism. And it's about how you organize a movement. Now, the core of the movement is the workers, but they have to wake up the proletariat, who are largely unaware that they need to be part of the class struggle.
Right.
But it's also crucial to get the petit bourgeois, which are the small business owners,
mm-hmm.
on your side, because they, too, are being victimized by corporations, but they don't get it because they bought into the economic system.
Right. That's what we've talked about before, that, you know, nobody wants to say, well, I'm of the poor working class right now, because a lot of people will define themselves still as middle class, but really they're not. And like you said, then people who may have a small business think, well, I'm one of the elite or something because they're a big shot in some little backwater town. But they don't get it, that they're part of the 99.whatever%. I mean, they are not the people who are getting rich off of other people. I mean, they may be doing their own share in their own little way, but people are using them to get money. So.
Well, I want to put in a plug here for the Main Street Alliance. This is an effort operating in 11 states right now to get small businesses on board to support things like universal health care, and critically important, they want small business people to support a constitutional amendment. So I really recommend people check out
Main Street Alliance.
And I'm going to have the Oregon executive director on one of my shows. I have two shows. The other one's Take Back America for the People.
Right. Take Back America for the People, which is your organization that you founded and you're president of. So we could also just Google Main Street Alliance, I suppose, then?
Yeah, and learn more about it. If you don't have one in your state, get moving. Get it going. We need them in all 50 states.
Right. And then also Google SFPI Radio for Saturday morning shows and podcasts. When do you think is a reasonable amount of time? When do you think that we could actually pass this type of an amendment?
Well, had Move to Amend started their own Pledge to Amend campaign this year, we could have done it by 2015, but they decided to wait till 2014. So they've thrown the schedule off by 2 years, and that means millions of people will die because we didn't take back the government 2 years earlier. So that's one of the problems I have with Move to Amend. But it will happen. It's just a question of when. I think once they start their Pledge to Amend campaign, it'll be much better publicized. They're better funded than we are, better known. And we'll get some version of the constitutional amendment. I don't think theirs is strong enough, but it's close.
Okay, so you're saying 2014.
Yeah, and they actually plan on calling it Pledge to Amend. David Cobb, their chief spokesperson, got all pissed at me because I was being very public about the Pledge to Amend campaign that I started, and he said, we own that domain name. And I'm like, so what? What are you doing with it?
Yeah. So what, just out of curiosity, why did they put it off?
Well, I can only speculate. The public reason they give is they said the American people aren't ready. They need to be educated. And my response to that is, well, what better educational tool can you have than making it a campaign issue? When everybody's paying attention to a presidential election, how can that not be the best time to do it? So why they're really not doing it, I think it's because, again, they want to be the leader of they want to lead the parade, and they aren't going to be ready until 2014 when they have their own 501c4.
You know, there's I don't know, too much egotism or something involved in so many things, not just that, but instead of just cooperating, well, we're not going to do anything until we can do it our way. Like you said, millions of people are suffering for that decision.
Millions of people will die. I mean,
yeah.
we've seen a wheat crop failure in Russia a couple of years ago. Now we have corn crop failure. Do you know what that did to corn prices? Do you know how many people depend on corn as a staple? There are going to be at least thousands, if not millions, of people dying from that alone.
Well, the strange thing is, though, because then corporations use this to make money. The thing is, a lot of the corn, because I'm in the Midwest, a lot of the corn isn't for human consumption anyway. It's for animals. And so, you know, I admittedly, because I'm vegan, I really think that cutting back on meat will help a lot of people live, because so much water is used to bring a cow to market, and 16 acres or something of land, which could grow lots of food for people. But my point is that they're using this to raise the corn prices on food.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the prices of corn is food, and it's not the corn that is for food that's really being affected. But
well, of course, the decision to do that, they're not just using it for animals, they're also using it for ethanol. If I'm not mistaken, that's a significant amount. And what they did was they turned over land that could have been used to grow corn for foods to do ethanol. Now, you got to ask yourself, why is the Democratic Party going along with the Republican Party on this? Why are they supporting mandatory ethanol in the gas and subsidies for ethanol production? They claim it's for environmental reasons, or at least the Democrats do. But the fact is, it takes more petroleum products to create ethanol than it does to simply burn oil.
Right. It's not environmentally sound. I've read that too. And, you know, all of this energy that they're spending on this, they could actually be working more on alternative energy.
That's right. And they're subsidizing nuclear, coal, and oil to a tremendous amount. If they weren't subsidizing them, solar would already outcompete. Solar and wind would already outcompete them.
You know, we see pictures every day online of different countries and what they've done with solar power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just astonishing the things that you can do with it. But no, I mean, Obama signed another, you know, things to go ahead and open up another nuclear plant. I think two of them, maybe, in the South Georgia. Yeah, not too long ago, at least for one of them, which would be the first in over 30 years. So,
yeah,
you know,
when I was listening to the State of the Union speech, I just about puked. I had to turn the show off when Obama said that he wanted clean energy, and he cited nuclear and clean coal as the way to do it.
Oh, my God.
They've only made a tiny investment in solar and wind, and that money goes to giant corporations that want to do windmill farms and giant arrays of solar cells, and the reason they do that is because that keeps the power centralized. Who owns the energy sources are going to, they're going to have tremendous power, both in politics and economically.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, energy should be free, and we can make it free with a minor investment
Germany did a program where they subsidized or they gave low-interest loans to people to put solar panels on their houses. They did this on 100,000 houses, and they required the power companies to buy back excess power at 10 times the market rate until the loans were repaid. And this was the result. The people ended up with free power and money in their pockets because they could still sell the excess at market rate after their loan was paid off.
Right.
The government was repaid with interest, which means the program was self-sustaining, and the nuclear power companies saved so much money they didn't have to build a nuclear power plant. But, I mean, they got so much power they didn't have to build a nuclear power plant. If they had continued the program, they would have destroyed the nuclear power industry, and everybody would have had free power. So they didn't continue it. But now, after Fukushima, they're shutting down their nuclear reactors. If they go
back, I
was going to
say Germany's shutting theirs down anyway, and some other countries. So it was too bizarre that we supposedly are going to be building one.
Even Japan wants to keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And that was against the wishes of the people. They held massive demonstrations against that. But they went ahead and opened. Yeah, yeah.
It
so
wasn't
it's
that
like,
long ago that that when an executive did something that hurt the people and got caught, he would either literally fall on his sword or resign and take whatever penalty.
Yeah.
He would feel guilty. And now they're acting just like the, I call them the international corporate terrorists that control the U.S. government. Japan, I could go on about this. Not just Japan, South Korea, all of the Western countries are lined up against Russia. Russia tried to get in on it, but it's like a mafia game, and they were not one of the favored families. So they're being isolated now. If you think about it, Russia's main allies in the Mideast were Libya, Syria, and Iran, and all three are being targeted. Why? They're trying to marginalize Russia, which will leave China as our only enemy. That's why China is building up their military, and we are building up our military in the Pacific Rim, as well as trying to pass the Trans-Pacific Free Trade Agreement, the so-called Trans-Pacific Partnership. If we do that, then we are forming an economic bloc to oppose China, because obviously the ones who are going to get the benefit of the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement are the multinational corporations of the West.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I get so discouraged, and then it's like, okay, you know, get over it, because there's people who, you know, are doing so much and they still have so much faith and hope. And I'm pretty optimistic myself, but you know, once in a while it is hard.
Well, I do encourage you, Ruth Ann, and your listeners, to tune into SFPI Radio this Saturday. We're going to be discussing how we can still save the planet, well, human civilization, by creating this tectonic paradigm shift, reaching a critical mass of awareness of what needs to be done, and then making it happen. I think we can save the planet, that is to say human civilization. The planet will survive, whether it has people on it or not.
Right, the planet's going to make it, but and we know.
Are you there? Oh boy, can't tell if I'm on the air.
Wow, are you there now?
Are we? Yes.
I didn't do anything in it. Like, I lost it, and then I just pressed yes, continue, and yeah. So,
Yeah, that happens sometimes, but I do encourage people to tune in on Saturday, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern, 10 Central, because we are going to be discussing this. The solution, I alluded earlier to the fact that the reason I started a nonprofit was I think I have a exceptional ability to talk to both conservatives and liberals at the same time. It's all about language, and it's all about appealing to their common interests and their the way they both think about certain issues, and trying to direct the conversation into a direction where we can have a civil conversation. So we're going to be talking about how we can do that on a mass level and how people can get involved in doing it themselves.
Definitely,
and that's how we create that.
Need. Yeah. Rick, thank you so much. You were full of knowledge and you gave us a lot of things to look up. And I would say if you only take away from this, just go on Facebook, the soldiersforpeaceinternational.org, and you can find everything else from there.
And, well, thanks for having me on.
Sure. It's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Feed Your Head. That was Rick Stagenborg from Oregon. And he is the president and founder of Take Back America for the People. Now we are going to, California. We're still on the West Coast with Cynthia Hamill. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi there, Ruthann. How are you?
I am great. How about you?
Great. I was hoping that I made it in. I wasn't sure if I was on the call or not.
Yeah. You just, you did. And right when you were coming in was when, like, I got a disconnect and a connect on whatever, on Skype. It was either Skype or Blog Talk. I'm not sure. There was a little glitch. But good to have you here. And
yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, chemtrails have fascinated me since I first heard about them about 10 years ago. And I know you've been researching them now for years.
Yes, it's probably going on now 2 years was when I first stumbled across the information on weather warfare and chemtrails and then literally experienced them a few weeks later in my own neighborhood. So I was out photographing them for a good 8 months, you know, daily almost, in both San Diego and in Las Vegas. I spent a full month at McCarran Airport in Vegas filming them. So it's been a fascinating journey just, you know, seeing how they develop and how they change and shift. And what many people think of as clouds are actually chemtrails. They just don't see them developing in the air, you know, at the time that they're dispersing and formulating into what they turn into, these huge geoengineered clouds.
Right. I know, because I think a lot more people actually see them than realize, of course, what they're seeing. And for you, it was almost some type of sign, I think, if you want to call it that, just the fact that you had heard about them, and then within a few weeks, you were seeing such great evidence of them.
Yes, it was almost like an assault and an attack on my whole neighborhood at one point, where there were like chemtrailed X's and tic-tac-toe patterns, like literally all over the sky. It was just unbelievable what was going on. And I was so lucky to have dated a photographer right before that who had been showing me how to work with my digital camera. So I was ready to go when all that happened. I was out there with my camera just, you know, firing away, shooting picture after picture, and I have now like this huge collection of chemtrail photos, probably over like 3,500 or so of, you know, all this activity. So it's been quite an artistic journey as well as, you know, some type of environmental journey, you know, to study about all this stuff.
Well, what did you, when you first heard about that, before you saw them in your own area, what did you think? I mean, how did you hear about them, and what kind of an impression did it make?
Well, this goes back to a story. I was dating a guy who was an avid, you know, bicycler, and he was out almost every weekend running like these 80-mile marathon type runs up to North County and, you know, all over San Diego and stuff. And so right before the weekend, like probably on a Thursday, he was over at my house and said, "Hey, Cynthia, can you Google and find out what the weather's going to be like for this weekend?" He was kind of wanting to know what to pack in his, you know, his bicycle pack and all that stuff. And so I started like Googling, and all of a sudden I like hit the wrong button, and apparently this whole weather warfare, you know, YouTube thing pulled up, and I was just kind of like very taken aback to even see those two words in the same sentence, weather and warfare.
Yeah.
It was just very uncanny, you know, to see those two words together, and I was like, what is this? And so it was a History Channel video that was a four-part series, and it's absolutely unbelievable. It explains kind of what chemtrails are. It doesn't go into great depth about it, but it shows you kind of what directed energy weapons are about, like lightning bolts and how they can be used, you know, to electromagnetize the sky and send and direct like lightning bolts, which translated after much research, that means that they're capable of using these as a, you know, directed energy weapon attack on targeted individuals or targets. So they can actually hit something directly from a satellite with this type of technology, or even a cell tower or anything that directs some type of directed energy weapon. Someone could even have like a short, you know, type a unit that's just right outside your house perhaps, or running by in like a Google-looking car or something like that, or a van. They could be parked outside of your house and directly sending and interfering and sending signals that cause electronic harassment to targeted individuals. So this is a whole new science, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody's covering this on the TV, on the radio typically. They're not making the connection that all of this stuff is linked.
Right, and that's it. They just aren't making the connection.
Yes, I mean, all this information is coming out, even on, you know, Facebook news feeds. You've got independent articles that are coming out about mind control and HARP technology, but you're not seeing the connection that all of this stuff is linked. And there's one article that took me to that conclusion, and it was on Rents.com, and it was called What Chemtrails Are. And that article, the lady who wrote that did a profound job of basically just outlining what this whole science is about and how it's actually used.
And I bet it's scary. I mean,
it's very scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just at that whole chemtrail conference in L.A., and there were 18 speakers that spoke on this, and literally not a single person really brought up the fact that they can actually target individuals and use this as a part of the directed energy weapon approach. So there's not even anyone who's really making that connection.
Well, it sounds like the next convention, maybe you should be a speaker.
Yeah, probably so.
You know, really.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
What was the convention like? I mean, I've never heard of it. It sounds very interesting.
Well, you know, it was absolutely thrilling to get to meet people like Clifford Carnicom and, you know, Cynthia McKinney, and Roseanne spoke. I didn't get a chance to meet her or get my picture taken with her, but she was there speaking. And so, you know, there were a number of people there that I've seen all over YouTube, and I've used in my research projects, and I've had them on my radio show interviewing them. And so it was a real thrill to meet these people. It was like meeting my favorite rock star. So it was an awesome conference, and I highly recommend it for anyone who's into this or delving into the study of this to attend the next one that they have, because it was really profound. And then, of course, the people that were drawn to it, there were some really outstanding environmentalists and people there that are really, really into the study of chemtrails, and it just attracted such a high-level person that I do highly recommend attending. It was really awesome.
So it's every year?
I don't know if they have plans to do one next year, if it's going to be like an annual event, or if they're going to do it in another location or something. But I would hope that they would continue this, because it really had such a good resonance with everybody there in the audience. And, you know, I just felt like it was a really good vibe. I think that it's a very good group to interact with. And then there were a lot of connections and a lot of business cards being passed around and people making contacts. So it was a really good place to meet people of like mind.
Yeah, well, I could see that. About how many people you think were there?
You know, I would say I was not there on Friday. I got in late from San Diego on Friday, and I didn't attend that day. But Saturday, I would say there were probably about 150 to 180 or 200 people that came throughout the day. And then that evening, of course, they had a bigger audience because they were showing the movie Why in the World Are They Spraying by Michael Murphy. So.
Yes.
They introduced that film, and there were probably more people in the audience in the evening to see Roseanne and Cynthia McKinney, and then also to see Michael Murphy's debut of that film.
Right. I saw that film. I don't know if it's still available online, but I saw it free, and I loved it. Would you like to just explain a little bit about what it's about?
Well, I think it'd be good to probably go back over what his first film was. It was What in the World Are They Spraying?
Right.
And that film kind of gives, like, the premise that, yes, they are spraying something. They kind of alluded to the chemicals that they're finding in soil samples, and which are basically aluminum, strontium, boron, cadmium, and other chemical things that basically alter the soil content, the air quality, and change people's breathing. And, you know, it's linked in with health concerns. So the first movie kind of covered that, and it also showed Michael Murphy going to Washington, D.C. and interviewing politicians who absolutely knew nothing about the whole study of chemtrails or geoengineering or any of that. So it was amazing to actually see that the politicians didn't know what was going on with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then his second film, of course, Why in the World Are They Spraying? That went into more of an explanation of the weather patterns and how they're able to control weather that links in with the commodities, you know, industry, where people can actually forecast the weather and then place stock bets, betting on what stocks are going to go up and down. So it kind of covered that extensively, and then a few other things. They went more into, you know, the chemical content and brought on this weather guy who was an outstanding speaker at the presentation. I'm not sure what his name is. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. I think it's Stevens. But he was one of the speakers on that, and then it brought on Dane Wigington and several other people that spoke as guest speakers. So it kind of filled in a little bit more of the dots that were missing from the first film on why are they spraying? What's it, you know, kind of some of the aspects of why they're spraying. It did not really delve into the directed energy weapon component or the fact that they're using this for mind control per se. So that part was eliminated. They didn't even touch on that, really.
Ooh.
You know?
Did at the convention or conference, did they talk about HARP?
There were some speakers, I believe, that spoke on Friday on that topic, and I did miss that day, so I didn't hear directly what it was about, but I do feel like they were covering that topic from what I heard, but I'm not sure how extensive they were covering it.
Yeah, because, I mean, that is important. It's, you know, we've heard so many things about HARP, and I talk to people who say, oh, absolutely not, you're so wrong. If they had that power, you know, that they would do such wonderful things with it. And it's like, well, no, they wouldn't necessarily stop the famines because they're making money that way. You know, anytime people think that something could be used for the good and only for the good, then they're going to be disappointed when they find out the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
it's
probably just like a tool, like anything else. You know, I've tried to explain other tools that people use. You know, you can take a knife and you can use that single knife in the back alley to actually stab someone and murder someone. But that same very knife could be used by a you know, surgeon, and it could, you know, perform life-saving surgery. So it's not about the tool. It's about how the tool is used and what the intention is of using the tool that, you know, matters here. So that example I try to use, and so I do feel like the way that they could use this could be very beneficial. They could actually use the Frey microwave hearing to beam into someone's head and help someone who can't even hear, you know, so or hear music or, you know, hear like a radio channel in their head if they're not able or capable of hearing. So there are, you know, certain capacities of this that I spoke with when I interviewed Dr. Robert Duncan that would have profound positive effects on the general population if it were directed in a very positive way.
But because we live in a world where greed takes precedence, is anything that's going to make the most money for the corporations and government is where it's going to go. So
yeah, and I have also heard it, you know, said that when people really get into this research, or they've worked for the Department of Defense or the CIA or things like that, when they've been on the inside of the program, typically the funding for something that's this extensive and this expensive to do the research and development on,
mm-hmm.
Generally starts with the military application first, because otherwise they wouldn't be spending the money to do the research and development. So it's always going to typically have some form of military application first.
Well, that's the way the internet began.
Oh, really?
So that's what I've been told. I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I've been told that a few times, that it was for defense purposes or military purposes or something when they first were experimenting with it. Now, and that might be wrong. But
it could be right, though. You're probably right.
Because what you're saying, it's true. They will find money for something that's militarily based.
Exactly.
And that's horrible. That's horrible. I mean, that would take precedence over health or welfare or education or something. But that's the way it works, yeah.
Yeah, and also look at the, you know, billions of dollars that we're spending on our, you know, Defense Department. So when you look at the budgets for these type of things, you know, that's pretty well how it goes. It's almost like looking at the Southwest Conference schools and see where they're putting their money. They're putting it into the football programs, you know, because that's where they're making money on ticket sales. So this, I guess, would be equivalent to that. It's kind of scary when you realize where people's priorities are, but that's where they're at. You know,
and there, I mean, that comes from all areas, because the government and the powers that be would much rather people get all excited over a football game than, you know, over trying to make sure that everybody in the country or the town in that area is fed.
Right. Yeah.
Or that the people, I mean, heaven forbid that the regular citizens decide to try to do something to make it a better place. Oh no, you know, let's give them plenty of movies, sports events, this kind of stuff, concerts. I mean, and I don't have anything against any of those things, but I don't like the way it's done, so that those people who are on the couch, this is their idea of the world.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's amazing how, you know, things are allocated, and sometimes you don't realize it until you start realizing where people's budgets are, where the United States budget is, you know. So it is what it is, I guess.
Yes. Well, you've had some experiences with this, on this topic, as far as the people you've met and just things you've experienced.
Yes, I didn't realize what all this was about until I began writing some articles. I guess that they were wanting to supervise or monitor or kind of use surveillance techniques on. So that was when I found myself targeted, and I was delving into, you know, a lot of research on 9/11 truth, and not just reporting about it in the way that other people had reported about it. I was actually delving in and finding the YouTubes that had the presidential addresses by George W. Bush and by Cheney, which literally state exactly why we're involved in the war with Iraq. And it's all over speculation. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Iraq was involved at all with 9/11 in any shape or form.
No.
So.
No.
So when I was posting stuff like that, you can imagine I was having to use some tin foil and wrap my arms with it, because they were literally shocking the heck out of me to get me to stop writing that article. So, you know, the article went out. It's had a lot of views. A lot of people have seen it. In fact, I ran into somebody who was out in La Jolla about 2 or 3 weeks ago who happened to be someone who knew and dated a celebrity's child. So that information is getting out there. You know, there are thousands of people who've actually seen this and who are now, you know, watching the videos. And so the information's out there. People can see it. It is on hubpages.com. And I write under the name Artsy Girl, so you can see my articles on the chemtrails that I've written. I was writing it under the name The Chemtrail Chronicles, and I have pulled that article to rework that one. But the main article that I still have up that has had such a high level of response is called Chemtrails, The Shocking Truth, and that has all the videos on it that will show you how these are used as directed energy weapons, not just the fact that the article is in there. There's that profound article that helped me to see what this is all about called, it's from Rents.com, but it's called, it's called What Chemtrails Really Are. So if you go to that article and you pull that up and you read it, I've even got a video on there of this girl who's like this hippie chick in Hawaii who's reading this off to people if they're too lazy to actually read it, because it's a long document. But she'll read it to you where you can get a pretty good idea of what this whole science is about. So if you go to that article, that's going to fill you in on basically what they're doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it. And then there are some other videos on there. The interview with A.C. Griffin, who was actually on the inside of the Chemtrail program, he spells this out in such a high-level scientific fashion that you can barely keep up with him. Like, the first time I heard it, I was like, woo, that, like, flew way over my head. But, you know, the more that I experienced what they were doing, the more I could kind of fill in the gaps and go, okay, this is what they're doing. This is the technology they're using to send a radio beam into your head where they can talk to you, you know, or they can wake you up or jolt you or whatever. So they've got all these different applications, and basically they're using artificial intelligence, according to Dr. Robert Duncan, who wrote the book Project Soul Catcher. He was on my radio show 2 hours, two separate times, and he gave a lot of information. That you can also pull up in some of my HubPage articles. So his information is quite profound, and he worked for the CIA as well as the Department of Defense. So he's got the scoop and the poop, and that is all in that book called Project Soul Catcher. You must read that if you're interested at all in this. That will explain, like, this whole A to Z technology. It, you know, you will know exactly what they're up to with that. It leaves literally no stone unturned. That whole book is fascinating.
Okay, and you said that, because I definitely believe that we're using maybe some technology from elsewhere. I don't know if
you mean like UFO type technology?
Yeah, alien kind of technology.
My gut feeling on this is so advanced that my first initial feeling on this was that they probably actually had technology that was so advanced that they were able to reverse engineer it and then claim it as their own. It's almost like finding like an Apple computer, like an iMac out in a field somewhere, like near a crop circle or something, and you stumble across that and you go, oh my gosh, what is this? And then you break it down and you take it into the lab or into the whatever you're doing with your engineering studio or something like that, and you start breaking it down, and then you go, oh my gosh, look at what this thing can do. Let's figure out how we can, you know, mass market this and apply it to military stuff.
Yeah.
So that was my feeling. I think they actually found some technology and then reverse engineered this stuff, because to this day I don't think that the human race is that smart. I think they've had some help, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think there's been help along the way. I mean, for eons, but yeah. I do that. So if we go to hubpage.com.
Yes.
That should do it. Yeah. Well, that was what I wondered. You know, I didn't get back to you in time to ask you about that, because that was the one that I had looked at before, and I didn't know if that was the info that you wanted to give today, because it is loaded.
That's, you know, I was even getting hints in the sidebar that, hey, girl, you've written a book. Why don't you just publish this thing, you know? So
yeah.
It is like a mini novella, I guess that's how you pronounce it. I'm just going to pronounce it like a Texan would, so a novella.
There you go.
You know, but it's long. It's got the scoop and the poop in it, and then all these videos. I mean, it is crammed full of stuff. So if you've ever wondered about what the heck they're up to with chemtrails and this mind control technology, that is the article that has the scoop and poop in it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this is available for people, but we for whatever reason, a lot of people don't know about chemtrails. They just think the clouds or just the plane, you know, it's just the exhaust, whatever, from the plane. And, oh, gee, isn't that pretty? Well, isn't that unusual? But they don't get it.
Well, there are literally a couple of videos on here that will kind of explain what a basic thing this is. The first illustration that I found that I wanted to put in here was this fly zapper illustration. There's like a, you know, they basically called it in the article what chemtrails really are, spray and zap. And so if you look at the illustration of the girl who's sticking her hand into like this racket-looking fly swatter thing, she, you know, she's being tortured by her friends, like, you know, do it, you know, put your hand in the fly swatter, because they know it's going to shock the heck out of her. So they're like coaxing her to put her hand in there, and so she puts her hand in there, and it zaps the heck out of her. So that is basically a grid. And what they're doing with the chemtrails, they're literally spraying a grid where this is formulating an electronic grid out in the sky. So the very air that we're breathing becomes electromagnetized like this force field, like the force field of that tennis racket-looking thing that the girl is sticking her hand in. So this is how they send the directed energy weapons, and it's very basic. It's very simple. So if you watch that video, you'll see how, you know, even though you can't see the electrical thing or the grid, you just see the racket and you just see, you know, her pull her hand back and scream,
right,
you know, when she hits it. You can tell that this is sending a directed energy current. So that's the basis of this, the spray and zap. And then now when you come to the second video here, Bill Gallagher, he has an interview with 90 Minutes on this. And this was a breakthrough for me, because when I finally heard this was about maybe 10 to 11 months into the research, of serious research, like 15-hour days some days. I think I gained like 30 pounds just researching the subject, because I didn't move much. I was just sitting there researching and hardly walking or doing anything. So anyway, so this has like the breakthrough in it, where he was working for the Air Force, and he has a lot of information on this video that goes into more or less what they're doing. So he kind of expounds on the article that I posted earlier about what chemtrails really are. And then if you come to this next grouping of videos, there's a video that is called The Military Has a Ray Gun, and it literally gives a demonstration of people out on a line, and then someone sitting there with a directed energy zapper zapping the heck out of them, where they can you know, send this beam, and you don't see it. It's invisible. It's not there. It's like Casper the Friendly, you know, the friendly ghost, but it's shocking the heck out of these people, and they're all jumping and leaping at the very same time. So there are two or three examples of this, and then the second one that I have here called Microwave Gun Demonstration Toward a Target. This guy is out in a field, and they've got this huge microwave gun that they're aiming at him, and he's out there trying to block it, like with some type of wood, you know, shield or something, and that's not really even helping. So this type of electromagnet a magnetic field and the directed energy current goes through walls, it goes through ceilings, it goes through floors, it goes through basements. You are not protected. This stuff is, you know, an electronic thing that literally goes directly through anything that could possibly block it. So unless you're in a Faraday cage, which I found out for my science group, you are going to be susceptible to receiving an electronic shock from this if someone is trying to target you with a microwave gun. So this is kind of what's going on with it. And then they actually call this an active denial system. And the video that's next in that series of videos is called the Active Denial System Riot Demo. And this is where there's like a whole group of guys who are like clustered out there behind this barbed wire. And they're all sitting there, and there's this big old, you know, directed energy weapons active denial system right in front of them. And it is zapping the heck out of them. And they're all leaping up like they were on a hot skillet at exactly the same time, like they were a cluster of popcorn balls or something. So you got to see it. It's unbelievable. But
I was just going to ask briefly, is that something that's similar to this LRAD that they have now? That they've been using on demonstrators?
It may be. I mean, the stun gun and this type of thing were developed, I believe, for crowd control. So when you get down to this other image that I have on this article, Chemtrails, The Shocking Truth on hubpages.com, when you go down to this one, the Heat Ray Crowd Buster, this also shows what they do to a crowd. So it's directly used for riots. It can separate and, you know, get people to completely, vacate some type of protest or whatever they're doing, because this is scary. When it hits you, you are like, oh my gosh, what is that? I didn't see it coming. It's invisible. It's not coming from anything that I can see. So it scares people and it takes people aback, and they probably start running for cover at that point.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that would be the normal thing to do.
Right. Now, the sad thing, the thing that goes on with these targeted individuals and the people that they're directly harassing with all this electronic harassment and, they're pinning people in their homes, in their cars, in their offices, anywhere they go, they can be under this electronic surveillance where it will, find you at the gym, and it will find your infrared body heat pattern. It will zap the heck out of you to let you know, oh, you're back on the grid, So this type of thing is very profound, because they're actually targeting people in their home environments, in the office. People cannot escape from this, and it can literally slice people exactly like a laser. So, some of those, it's been like a long time ago, but back in Texas when I was there around Fort Phantom Lake, there were all these cattle that had mutations on it, and they were thinking this was probably like some type of alien attack. No, I don't think those were alien attacks. I think they were experimenting on cattle with directed energy weapons, and I'm almost darn sure that's what they were doing.
Okay.
But, the laser beams can actually, attack someone remotely where you can't see them, but they could lacerate somebody's heart. They could cause an aneurysm. They could do any number of different things. They could slice somebody's fingers off. They could slice limbs off. They could cut you from head to toe. They can do anything to you that a laser could do in a hospital under a surgeon's expertise with direct precision. So they're able to use the infrared body heat patterns of someone where it lights up like a Christmas tree, and you can see people's body heat patterns and direct an energy weapon and target them. And now the movie that shows this technology in it is called This Means War. I just saw this, and this was a movie with Reese Witherspoon. It's an adorable, kind of like romantic comedy. You've got to see it. It's a really cute film. But they target her. She's got two CIA-type guys who have both fallen in love with her, and they show her body heat pattern. They show the body heat pattern with her and her date as they're in the car. So when you see that scene and they're, like, blowing up the drone that's attacking them in the airplane, that scene, that you'll see a direct picture of what an image looks like on an infrared body heat imaging thing. So you can see that, and then there's so many movies out with this technology in it. The Bourne Legend that I just saw is sprinkled with this whole stuff. The movie that just came out with the cute guy, what's his name, Colin Farrell, and it's a remake of the Schwarzenegger film. Help me out. What's the name of that movie? I just saw it.
I don't see movies. I mean, I'm writing down what you're telling me because it's like, okay, I'm going to try to, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'll probably think of it in a minute. But if you plug in Colin Farrell and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they were both in this film, and it's about kind of going back into time through this kind of like a mind control machine that basically instills memories in people that they have not actually had. So people can step into an alternate reality and live out a fantasy as if it were their own, their own experience. So that movie is all about this. That's part of the technology. That's part of what they're doing. So that came out probably over 18 to 20 years ago with Schwarzenegger, and now it's being remade. So Hollywood's on top of this. They know something. You can bet on that.
Right. Because when you're describing the movie, I think that I may have seen that actually, or part of it, or something. Yeah. I mean, back. It sounded, the plot sounded familiar.
Yeah. So, let me see if I can pull that up, and I'm going to just see Colin Farrell.
But frequently, that's the case. I mean, Hollywood is way ahead. Like, they're sort of trying to prepare people. And then you wonder, well, who from the government or, these sneaky little corporations, who knows and, is getting it there so that people are more prepared? Like, we've had a lot of, things in the past, couple decades about aliens and things. So there are people who figure, well, that's because, they're going to make the disclosure one of these days, and they want people to not be so terrified or whatever.
Yeah, I think that they do. I think they sprinkle information out there. There's so many films that have this type of thing in it. The movie actually was called Total Recall. I just looked it up. I cheated. I Googled it. So it is called Total Recall, and it's really good. Both films were good. I just recently watched the Schwarzenegger film and then the new one, the Total Recall. And, of course, the new one has this advanced technology in it where it's pretty mind-blowing. It's almost like watching the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise in it, and that's also another movie that's strongly peppered with this type of technology and showing the mind control advances, and that was about pre-crime, actually being able to read people's minds and see surveillance-type images that were coming up on this really high-tech screen that Tom Cruise was manipulating in the head office, the central office, and then they were sent out to actually stop people from committing a murder or a crime before it happened, these three psychics that were laying in this, bathtub device, this kind of funky-looking high-tech pool, kind of like a swimming pool type thing, laying there with all these head straps on them. It's wild. It's one of those fun movies that you've got to see. So if you're into sci-fi and you want to understand more about this technology, that movie has a lot of clues in it, including the nanobot technology, which is being used to go into people's systems through breathing in the chemtrails. They're actually breathing in metallics that have the nanobot technology in it that will activate and can roam around the body. And that's kind of what they're linking Morgellons disease to now. People can't, they're not understanding and putting the link together, but the nanobot technology and what is going on with that, it's almost like a little spider web that takes off. But I've talked to Morgellons survivors and people who are living with that, and they say that the fibers will come out of the skin and that it's almost like a little bitty, nanobot technology where it will start moving around and waving around with electronic waves. You can put a cell phone up to it, and it will start dancing around out of somebody's arm. So,
oh, God.
Yeah, I know. wow, this is far out. But if you go back to that movie, Minority Report, and you watch that movie and you see those little crazy critters that were crawling in Tom Cruise's eye, that's what this was about. Those were nanobots, but they were bigger than nanobots are. These were like big spider-looking creepy crawlers that were crawling in Tom Cruise's eye, but you know, kind of like all over. They were searching for him in this house. So those are like a bigger representation of what at times I felt when I was under the surveillance. Like there were literally nanobot particles that were seeking, you know, the source or the electronic stimulation. And the reason, now this is really wild, but at one point I was under such a directed energy weapon hit that I decided, okay, you know, I can't have some type of Faraday cage here, so let's get creative. I was in interior design, you know, I've got that background, and so I was like, why don't you just make a blanket out of aluminum foil and then put this blanket like under your bed and then put this blanket on top of you and like crawl underneath it. And so I did this one time, and it was when they were not allowing me to sleep. It was like 3 weeks of solid, nonstop sleep deprivation, where every time I would roll off to sleep, then they would be doing some type of Frey microwave hearing in my ears, or jolting me, or having a car alarm, you know, go off, or have the dogs rush through the door right as I was hitting some type of REM sleep pattern. And so at that point, I was willing to try anything. So I did try a tinfoil hat at that point, which I know it sounds crazy. This is absolutely off the wall. But, hey, guys, it works. If you're pinned down with this type of thing and you're a targeted individual and you're needing a good night's sleep, try the tinfoil hat thing. And then this blanket thing that I put on, this was really wild. I put the blanket up over me, and I made a blanket. I went to the kitchen table, and I took sheets of the aluminum, and I scotch taped them together where it was like this huge sheet of an aluminum foil sheet. And so I put that over me, and it was hotter than heck. I couldn't really sleep with that. But what happened was, when I covered up the sources, the nanobot technology, which I had breathed in, it was active in my system, I could feel it, it became active, and it was like these little nanobots running around like in my knee, which was trying to activate and control and tap into that. So it was very interesting. It was quite an experience, you know. And it's one of those things that you wouldn't believe until you actually experienced it. In a million years, I would not believe that they've developed this type of technology and that it is this advanced. But, hey, this is where they're at.
Right. Wow. Well, why did they stop targeting you?
You know, at a certain point, I decided to just pray. I was praying, and I was just like, you know, dear God, you know, if these people know what they're doing to me, they know that they're hurting me, and, you know, turn this around. Let them know that it's not okay to do this to people. Use them. Treat them with the same level of, you know, inhumane and inhumanity towards them. Hurt them. Hurt their loved ones. Hurt whatever it takes. In fact, I think I got to a point where I was kind of like, you know, just, you know, incapacitate these people until they stop doing what they're doing. They should not be doing this. This is a violation of every known human right. So when I started saying a prayer like that, I felt some relief. I think they got it. I think they knew my soul was committed to stopping and putting an end to this. Like, this is not fair. This is not right. Stop it. Cut it out now, or you're going to be the recipient of this same exact technology.
So, okay, because you stood firm, you think that's why then it was just like, okay, yeah.
I was praying, and I was praying like for hours one night. I was crying. I was praying. I was just trying to sleep. This was about 3 weeks into sleep deprivation therapy or whatever they were doing, and it was absolutely excruciating. And a friend of mine and I had been researching, trying to put an end to this, and we were up Googling and trying to look for this, and that's when we came across the article, What Chemtrails Really Are. That that was a breakthrough for me because of where I was and how long I had been under the sleep deprivation torture. So that was where I was with this. And it relaxed. It let up after that. I think when they finally realized, you know, she's got a point. Cut this out. They did.
I mean,
they backed off.
You think they're really that concerned about humans? About other humans?
You know, I feel like they can read people's thoughts, and I know this for a fact because of some of the things that they're able to do with, you know, Facebook. I've been on Facebook before where I'm, you know, writing an article and I've got a Facebook page open on one side and I'm writing my article on the other side, and all of a sudden I'll see these images come up. And here's a good example of that. Like, say, one time I was looking down at my dog, Honey Bear, and I was kind of like, Honey Bear, you really need a bath. You know, thinking, okay, I need to get this dog into the groomer. And so just as I was looking at her and thinking that, right on the right side of the bar, there was this ad that popped up about dog grooming in my neighborhood. So how do you get that? They're able to read our minds. They're able to literally read your mind and put up stuff. And then they can also condition people. Like, there were times when I was, you know, writing an article and I would get, you know, on a topic that they certainly did not want me to discuss or to write about. And then
right.
All of a sudden, yeah, there would be a picture of a meat cleaver with blood dripping on it, and then a page that would take you to this, you know, some type of dungeon-looking thing, this website that they had purposely posted to try to get me to stop writing about the subject I was writing about. So, I mean, it was amazing. They do some type of conditioning, and all of this is psychology. They're dealing with somebody who took some level of psychology courses. So, I've got a minor at least in psychology. So I knew what they were doing. I'm an artist. I can see the images. I know what they're doing. So they're doing psychological imaging and advertising in order to condition and get people to do what they want. So this is going on through Facebook. It's going on through Google searches. I've seen it all over the Internet. And when I started photographing this, that's when they stopped. So when I was creating a file of documentable evidence of this is what's going on with my computer, that's when they stopped and laid off of it.
Oh, okay. So you had to show that you were, because, well, I know that Facebook does that just for other people, depending on what you've liked or what you've posted, because I will get a lot of things to do with India because I write I post things on Kashmir. And just different things like that. And I can't think, the other day something came up, and it was shortly after I had liked something. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, I would never buy or look at the ads on Facebook. But it's, but you're to show up with a bloody cleaver and a dungeon right when you're right, that is horrid. I'd have to take a break.
Well, they're trying to condition you to stop. And I was communicating at that point with a group of scientists, and the ad that was showing up was about a group who would cannibalize one another, like the movie The Saw. That was what the ad was about. So they're not messing around. I mean, they're actually targeting people with stuff that means something to you. If you're scared about something, like,
right.
I'm a pianist, yeah, and I work with my hands. I'm a typist. I'm a painter. So they would threaten me by showing me images that my hands would be cut off or my fingers would be cut off. So they were trying to get me to stop writing by showing me these graphic images of fingers, you know, being detached, and, you know, gloves with fingers missing, and, I mean, all this stuff. It was, like, unbelievable. And as an artist, you can look at that, and you know exactly what they're up to. And then this gets to a point where they're doing the gang targeting as well, which is really far out, where they go into your neighborhood or they go into your areas that you frequent, and they will actually plant images and things in that neighborhood in order to let you know that you are on some type of major mind control thing where they're following you, or they know where you go, or they know exactly what what area of the sidewalk that your dog pees on, and they're leaving you some type of clue. Like I've got pictures of a character, a cartoon character with three fingers missing. They were trying to get the finger thing across. Yeah. You're going to lose some fingers here if you don't stop this. You know what I mean? So they had done that on the sidewalk wall. They took an image of this and drew an image of a girl missing fingers on the exact spot that my dog Hunter always pees on the sidewalk. So it was that specific. And then sidewalk art that directly related to some of the other warnings that they had. And then walking across this one walk bridge, there were all these words that had shown up in my emails over the years to a friend of mine, where I was doing like I would coax them and would say, bok, bok, you know, like you're just chicken, you know, do this,
right,
or I'd be
right.
kind of coaxing them to do something. So they even used my spelling, bok, right at the middle of the bridge, trying to get me to jump, trying to get me to use that bridge as a suicide device. So these people are mean. They're very hateful. They are pushing people into a state where they literally will try to commit suicide, and that's what this whole gig is about. If you read the book by Dr. Robert Duncan, he doesn't mix words. Their goal is to get targeted individuals to kill themselves and commit suicide. That is their agenda.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Because we don't realize that we're dealing with such evil, and because it's backed by the government in some form or other, whether it's black ops, like you said, a lot of our congressional and senatorial people don't even know about it, which is another reason to have them, you know, maybe term limits and have them get back on the street once in a while, but that's a whole other topic. But they don't realize, we don't realize, like, who's really in charge.
Right. And, you know, it was amazing which articles would get this type of response. Like, at one point I posted an article on Gaza, and I immediately thought, now, who is sponsoring this, you know?
Yeah.
Who is behind this? Gaza is related to the Palestinians, and the Palestinians were being killed by the, you know, Israelis. And
oh, yeah.
That was, you know, that was a week they would not let me sleep until I took that article down. They did not want that information posted on Facebook. They did not want people to know about it. That was exactly what they used to target me with. And they kept after me. They did the same thing with the BP oil spill. I had some really good interviews that I, you know, posted on my Facebook account and had direct interviews or direct evidence or something that really showed this thing is a huge foul-up, you know, and
yeah.
People should be behind bars after this. And they would not let me sleep after that. They did not want that information out. They wanted it blocked, and they continued to target me until I took the information off.
That's just too scary that they can do this. And then, like, okay, the targeting is one thing, but then with the chemtrails, actually, they're thinking so many other things have been attributed to it. Autism is one, I've heard. I mean, that some people think that could be. But we know what our water is no longer nearly as pristine as it used to be, and the soil, and all of this is coming from so many chemicals. Now, aluminum foil helped you at that time, but to be drinking and eating aluminum is not a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's something that can block, you know, rays. Lead can be used as a deterrent, something that will block a microwave beam. You know, a friend of mine and I, Tara and I, had a conversation at one point. She was also a targeted individual, and we were having this deep discussion about, you know, the targeting of individuals and what she had experienced. And then all of a sudden we got on the topic of why is lead paint now, you know, basically taken off the shelves? Why can we no longer paint with lead paint? Could it be that when paint, you know, people paint that in their house, then it becomes a way to block the government from actually aiming and directing directed energy weapons at people?
Uh-huh.
You get what I'm saying? So what if they took lead paint off the shelves, not because it was a health risk, but because it would make people's homes a safe haven from this type of harassment?
Oh, my God, because we know that, that lead was such a protective thing for, what was it, like x-rays and things?
Exactly, yeah. When you go to get an x-ray, they cloak themselves with some type of lead, device or a garment where it's not going to affect them, where they're not getting those rays.
Oh, gee.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wow. Yeah,
yeah, this is a fascinating, subject. Yeah. And, the deeper that you go with it and the more that you realize what they're really doing, what they're capable of doing, how many people they're targeting, people are speaking out. I mean, there's books all over the place that discuss this to great detail. You've got doctors coming out, like Dr. John Hall. You've got, he's written a book on this. You've got people who are coming forward with the Presidential Commission on Bioethics with 20 people coming forward. That's in my article. If you scan down the page, you'll be able to see on Chemtrails, The Shocking Truth, you can see Presidential Commission on Bioethics led by Amy Guttman, appointed by Obama to hear 20 targeted individual cases. When you go to that and you see these people talking about what they have been under for sometimes more than 10 years or more, the type of torture and harassment and electronic, assaults in their homes, offices, cars, anywhere they go, they're basically being treated like a lab rat. And these people explain it to you in simple, plain English where anybody can watch these and see that this is a huge science and it's a huge violation to the entire, civil rights. This is more of a profound impact on people than what Gandhi fought for and what Martin Luther King fought for, because this attacks everyone, men,
right.
women, children,
right.
black, white, every color. This, has no type of discretion. If they want to target an individual, they can, and they do. So
yeah.
It's very important that people understand that.
No, I'm just blown away by this lead thing, and I'm so, like, my gut says, yeah, you're right. This is something else. Cynthia, huffpage.com, and Chemtrails, The Shocking Truth. This article is filled with videos and written words, too. It's something you don't do in a day, actually.
No, this is a study. It would probably take most people like about a week to go through it. And every time I see something new on the subject, I try to interject it to it because I just feel a responsibility for people who may not have the Google skills to research this or they don't have the time to research it or something. I feel a responsibility since I have a background in advertising and marketing and writing that somebody needs to come forward and explain this to people. If they can't put the dots together, then I'm going to help them connect the dots with the stuff.
Right. So this sign has everything put together, and it will take quite a while if you're, even concentrating. I mean, that's all I can say. This, you always have new things that make me go, oh, fuck.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, okay, that goes together now. So thank you so much, my friend. And,
well, thank you, Ruthann. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, you have a great holiday weekend and a blue moon tonight.
Oh, yes, once in a blue moon. Yeah. Well, have a great one yourself. Have a great one.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.